Welcome in to a semi-rare weekend edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf, here to bring it to you. The Knicks have an uneventful trade deadline, though they still made the biggest deal with the Porzingis trade. Nothing doing on the actual day, and they end up waiving both Wesley Matthews and Enes Kanter. We'll get into that next on Locked On Knicks.
And then the Knicks managed to lose twice in a week to the Pistons. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. They're at 15 straight games lost, top of the tankathon standings. We'll break down those games, though, because Dennis Smith Jr. and Mitchell Robinson are balling out pretty good. So we definitely want to talk about that.
And then hopefully we don't bum you out too much and you can enjoy the rest of your weekend. All that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Knox foul from behind. Count it at one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your semi-daily New York Knicks podcast. We've been getting out five a week. We've been doing a pretty good job. The New York Knicks had an uneventful trade deadline Thursday. They didn't really do much of anything. We thought they were going to probably put together some kind of deal for Noah Vonleh. I mean, he was the type of guy who seemed like just kind of an obvious fit on a contender or pseudo contender as a big that's pretty versatile offensively, can theoretically hit some threes pretty good defensively, as you keep referencing, Alex, the Giannis stopper to a certain point. Who knows if that would hold up in the playoffs, but I'm kind of surprised no team wanted to take a gamble on that. He remains a New York Knick, and then the Knicks also unable to get anything for the likes of Emmanuel Mudiay, if David Fizdle even allowed them to attempt that, trading his first son. And finally, nothing doing for Wesley Matthews, so they ended up buying him out alongside Enes Kanter, who I think we knew going in there was not much of a market for. So I guess you could kind of call that a disappointment, though. I wouldn't say I went into the day necessarily expecting any of those guys to get traded outside of maybe Vonleh.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what my expectations were for the deadline. You know, you always fantasize about maximizing all the guys you have on the team and getting a maximum return for all of them. But, you know, it is what it is. Like, a lot of big men moved during the deadline. You know, there was like Thon Maker and Noah Vonleh and just a number, or sorry, not Noah Vonleh, Nico Mirotic and just Marcus Gasol. Yeah. Sorry, I got Vonleh on the brain. But yeah, there was a lot of guys that moved. So it's not totally ridiculous that Vonleh didn't move. It was a little surprising because that seemed like the one guy on the Knicks that they could have gotten some sort of return for. But maybe teams were turned off by the fact that he doesn't have any bird rights or anything and they would have no leg up in re-signing him. So it'd be just kind of a, like, do you really want to spend a second round pick or something for a guy that could amount to just a rental for the year? And most teams probably just said, nah, not worth it. You know, and the other teams that maybe would have been in the market for him traded for someone else. So I don't know. Yeah, it was whatever. Like, I didn't think it was entirely likely that you would get anything for like Wesley Matthews either, just because matching his salary would have been difficult, especially from a Knicks perspective where they didn't want to take back any long-term contracts and any money beyond this year. So that wasn't surprising to me either. It was disappointing only in the sense of like, I wanted stuff to happen, but it didn't, but I wasn't like expecting things to happen. So it didn't really shock me all that much.
Yeah. I feel kind of as if Vonleh had kept up his 3-point shooting from earlier this season and had kind of proven that to be real when he's been, I mean, like over the last like 2.5 months now, he's been like largely atrocious from behind the arc. Like, I think like that would have made a big difference. And obviously that's probably just speaks more to who Vonleh is as a player than anything particularly unlucky on the Knicks end. But I think to me, like, that's kind of his swing skill in terms of how attractive he is to a contender. And like, at this point, like, I mean, for everything he brings defensively and like sometimes on offense. Like if you're like a Milwaukee, like, I mean, or Toronto, like you said, like maybe like Vonleh was like the backup plan. Like if Milwaukee doesn't get Mirotić and Toronto doesn't get Gasol, then they're thinking like, you know what, let's just throw the Knicks a second round pick. Let's have that one extra guy that we could bring in as kind of an eighth or ninth guy off the bench. But then once you get those two, I think you smartly point out like the market kind of closes up, and like, and other teams are kind of asking like, well, like, is it even worth it? Because like, I'm not sure if this guy, like, unless he's like really like gets hot from three for a series, like I don't know if he has enough utility to really make a playoff rotation, at least at the highest possible level. And then it's like not really worth giving up any type of asset for him. Did you have any other thoughts on moves that other teams made across the deadline? Because I did think Tobias Harris trade was fairly significant for the Knicks. Not, I guess, in like the semi-obvious way of the Sixers potentially having a big four going forward if they actually are able to re-sign all four of these guys. But I thought even more so in the Clippers kind of matching the Knicks and having potentially two max slots this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, it's based off the scuttlebutt, like going around the league, it seems like the general consensus right now is that, like, everybody thinks the Knicks are going to get Durant and everybody thinks the Clippers are going to get Kawhi. And that's fine and cool and whatever. Like, I hate to, like, put it like this because I don't want to, like, oversell myself on this because that never ends well. But you keep hearing all these, like, national, like, very plugged-in guys just kind of making these coy references to, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure Durant's going to the Knicks, and not really wanting to even, like, put their foot down and, like, acknowledge that it could not happen. You know what I mean? Like, that's the part that's really starting to get on me a little bit about, oh, this could really happen. But, I mean, if that's the conventional wisdom is that Kawhi's going to the Clippers and Durant's coming to the Knicks, then yeah, it does kind of harm the Knicks in some way that if the Clippers open up another max spot, then all those other stars, you know, that are available, Klay Thompson's, Kyrie Irving, you know, guys like that are going to be looking at these two teams now rather than just the one with a brand new superstar, you know. And you could probably, I don't even know if it's, I don't know. I was going to say, I don't know if it's an argument. It is still kind of an argument that, you know, who's better between Durant and Kawhi. But Durant, you know, naturally is in his 30s and Kawhi is still in his 20s. So that definitely plays to Kawhi's favor as far as like wanting to team up with him long term. Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't find it particularly worrisome. I do trust the Knicks to have a plan. And I think if worst comes to worst, the Knicks would do kind of the same thing that the Lakers are doing currently, which is, you know, if they land Durant, because Durant, for whatever reason, decides he wants to come here, like, no matter what, I think the Knicks, hopefully in a little more, I don't know the word, like, in a nicer way, would keep all their young guys and, you know, look to make a trade or, you know, sign a bunch of vets to, like, probably a little over market value deals for 1 year, to just kind of fill the roster for a year and then just kind of keep rolling that cap space over, trying to build a contender around Durant. But hopefully not like alienating the entire roster in the process, like Magic Johnson has managed to do with the Lakers at this point after he dangled like every player on the roster for Anthony Davis and like got to the point where opposing fans were chanting to Laker players that LeBron was going to trade them to another team. So we'll see how that goes, but yeah, I'm not like super worried, to answer the question in a roundabout way. It doesn't really worry me that much if the Knicks already kind of have this weird backdoor commitment from Durant. I'm convinced that someone at some point will come here again. It's just, you know, they'll maybe have a little more competition than they would have.
Right. No, I'm generally with you. I think they're almost competing in two different circles, and it's interesting because I would argue like even before the trade, like you can make a pretty good case like the Clippers had like maybe a slightly better collection of assets than the Knicks just because they were a little bit more diversified and they have so many different young guys. And they added, I guess you could say similar to the Knicks, and the two future first round picks in this deal, with that unprotected Miami one probably being like, I mean, a lot of people repeatedly refer to it as like the most valuable, like off traded pick in the NBA. And I'm also a big Landry Shamet guy. So maybe even from just a non-Knicks perspective, I really enjoyed that trade. But yeah, I think that's just about, unless you have any final thoughts on this deadline, Alex, I think we can just about wrap up this first segment.
Well, I feel like, I mean, Wesley Matthews is whatever. We should probably give Cantor a little bit more of a send off.
Just
because, you know, he was here for over a year. So no matter how rocky it was, like, so I'll give Cantor this. And, you know, I was obviously, I shat on Cantor plenty on here. And I'm sure that people are going to be like, oh, like, whatever you say that's nice about Cantor, like, blow it out your ass. Like, you definitely didn't like Cantor. And that's very true. I didn't like Cantor very much because of his antics off the court in the last couple months. But for what it's worth, like, that guy actually did always profess his love for New York, always said he wanted to win here, which just wasn't in the cards this year. And that's why he didn't play, on top of the fact that he just wasn't very good. But, you know, you got to at least give him credit for that. And he was always nice to the city and always, you know, kind of spoke kindly of New York and how much he liked it here. So I give him credit for that. I also give him credit for being a lot more classy than Kristaps Porzingis when he left. He immediately posted something on Twitter, just said, in part, let me start off by thanking the Knicks organization for the past year and a half. Playing in MSG in front of the Knicks fans is something I'll always remember. Each day I spend in the NBA is a blessing, and I look forward to my next adventure. Today I've been released by the Knicks, which gives me the opportunity to sign with another team for the remainder of the season. The Knicks fans, management, everyone in between have made me feel at home since the moment I arrived here. So, and he says, I wish nothing but success to the franchise and the fans. So, you know, it was really nice of him. So, ultimately, he's kind of a clown, kind of a cornball, but he was classy. David Fizdale probably put it best when he was asked. This is from an article from Mark Berman of the New York Post. Fizdale said, obviously, we never want any of our stuff aired out in public, which that was probably the biggest sticking point with Cantor, is that he started taking things to the media instead of just dealing with it behind closed doors. Fizdale said, that's just something that we're really trying to build into our culture, that we can go deal with the stuff internally. He was really frustrated, and I understand that. I always said that. I had empathy for his situation. Unfortunately, this is where we are, and this is where we were. I really enjoyed having Ennis. He was fun to be around. You never want to see a guy go through that. I'm just hoping that he can land with a playoff team and get his feet wet into some winning. So, I don't know. Just in general, like, it was more cordial than I thought it would be with the whole Cantor situation coming to an end, and I'm actually glad that it went that way, because I think that more so than the Porzingis situation shows more about how this front office is operating, and that, you know, they're trying to be cordial to everybody, you know, not be the same old petty Knicks or whatever. And you can even say the same that after the Porzingis trade, I mean, people want to say that they were trying to smear Porzingis or whatever, but if facts paint someone in a bad way, that's not smearing, that's just saying what happened. So, you know, the Porzingis situation is not come off smelling as nice for Porzingis as it has for the front office. So this just inspired a little more confidence in me. But overall, you know, bye to Ennis. Good luck. I do hope he finds somewhere where he can be happy and play. I don't know if a playoff team is actually going to give him a shot to play any significant minutes down the stretch, but at least maybe he could get on with a winning team and be a bench piece for them in some way or something.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I obviously disagree on a lot of the KP stuff, but we don't need to go down that road here. We have two Pistons games to talk about. But yeah, I mean, shout out to Ennis. I think the most credit I'll give him is I know you seemed mildly annoyed by it. I was kind of mildly amused by his antics over the last few months. I am going to almost miss him because it was just like kind of a pleasant distraction from just how utterly like terrible and incompetent this team is, and I liked having like you be able to shit on him on this podcast, because that was enjoyable for me to listen to. And he was just kind of fun to talk about. So I'm going to miss him as a topic of conversation. I'm going to have to rewrite the little promo we put together for our show, which centered partially around Ennis Cantor, though it was only like two sentences long, so that should be pretty doable. Same with you. I wish him well. I think, assuming it's safe for him, like I could see him like ending up playing in Europe in the next year or two or three, because I don't think he's ever going to get the role in the NBA that he desires, because he's just not good enough to warrant that role. I do think it'd be funny if a competing tanking team were to pick him up just to like help the tank, like if the Cavs like picked him up and just played him like 40 minutes a night over Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love. I think that would be great. And I think that would be, I think they would actually deserve the number one pick if they did that, because the Knicks didn't have the stomach to just play tennis for 40 minutes a game and tank to the best of their abilities. But yeah, again, I wish the guy well, and I'm kind of intrigued to see how his next couple of years go, and maybe he can prove us wrong and still have kind of a second life as an NBA player. All right, with that, we will wrap up segment number one. When we come back, we'll get into the Dennis verse. 56 points for Dennis Smith Jr. over the last two games. We'll talk about that, and I guess a little bit about how the Knicks lost to the Pistons twice, and they were two of the worst games of basketball I've seen in my life. That next on Locked On Knicks.
Welcome back in Locked On Knicks. I'm Alex. He's Gavin. We're breaking down a couple of Pistons-Knicks games. We were thinking about maybe breaking down the first one earlier in the week, but with all the deadline stuff, with trade bag and all that, it was more fun just to deal with hypotheticals than deal with real life at that point. But now we're past fantasy land. There's no more trade deadline to look forward to. Now we just have the slog for the rest of the season. Luckily, we have some All-Star weekend stuff coming up next weekend, or otherwise I would, things would be pretty melancholy for the next like month and a half, but we're in good shape. We're good here. So first off, the Knicks lost 105-92 at home on Tuesday to the Pistons. Then they followed that up by losing 120-103 Friday night, last night. So, you know, it was an eventful couple days, I guess. You know, it just from the sense of Dennis Smith finally seems to be finding himself a little bit. The team as a whole doesn't seem to have their shit together yet. There's a large number of possessions on offense and defense for that matter, but on offense is most notable where Smith is kind of just dribbling the air out of the ball and everybody's just kind of watching because they don't really know what to do at this stage. And so I guess we'll see how that adjusts over the next, you know, couple weeks, and hopefully like over All-Star break, they can get in a few good practices, even though Smith is going to be at the dunk contest and Knox is going to be at the Rising Stars game. But in that, you know, that extra time that you get off before and after the All-Star break, hopefully they can get in some good practices, get a, you know, sort of a system installed here, hopefully get Smith comfortable with Mitch Robinson. Cause last night in the Friday night game, they played Smith with DeAndre Jordan for most of his minutes. Just, I think, to keep him comfortable while he was having his career night, cause that's who he's, you know, he has more time with than Mitch Robinson. But if those two can develop chemistry, that's going to be pretty nasty to watch because they've both been playing like really, really good lately. But just on the Smith front, in the Friday night game, he had a career high 31 points, 8 assists to go with that. He shot 11 of 19 from the free throw line, which is a little concerning, but 9 of 15 overall for 60%. I mean, I don't know about you, Gavin. I loved his game last night, even though the team as a whole wasn't playing that great. He was decisive. He didn't turn the ball over much, which was good to see. Only 4 turnovers versus 8 assists. So that's a 2-to-1 ratio. That's about what you want to see out of your point guard. And I don't know. I thought it was better. He's gotten better in each of the 3 games that he's played so far. So at this rate, he'll be averaging 50 a night like James Harden in no time, I think.
Yeah, I will say, just as a general comment, I think it's a pretty big indictment on the current state of the Knicks that in 2 straight games against the Pistons, like the team that maybe most like epitomizes mediocrity out of anyone in the NBA, that I would say Smith and Robinson were, I think, the only two guys who like flashed at all in either games. Like there were small little moments for other guys throughout the 2 games, like DJ and Dotson were like both okay in the second game, but just a rough 2 games in Knicks basketball. But yeah, Dennis Smith was absolutely, along with Robinson, the bright spot of those two. I mean, to me, the biggest thing that stood out on Friday was just the adjustment from that initial game where he was getting to the rim pretty well and had a couple of nice moments around the bucket and certainly as a playmaker, but just wasn't consistently generating contact, only shot 2 free throws in the second game. You just said he comes back, shoots 19 free throws, which is just a ridiculous James Harden-esque number. And there are a whole lot of guards that go through their NBA careers never shooting 19 free throws in a game. And obviously you'd like him to, if it more like, even if he just had kind of an average night at the line, like went like 14 for 19, that already makes the whole stat line look a whole lot better. 34-8 would have been pretty appealing, but yeah, just an awesome game for him. I mean, you see the freakish athletic ability, defensively, even though he had a couple of possessions where he was like awful, like there was one where he just died on a Blake Griffin screen and like didn't really seem to like give a shit. But then there were other ones where like he showed off really nice anticipation and like picked off passes and help, which is a really good sign just for his awareness and engagement on that end of the floor. And I think you make a really astute point. Like, he's doing this all without ever really having much practice time as a Knick. I'm sure they maybe got him one or two on Wednesday and Thursday. But I mean, as he continues to get in the rhythm, I'm really excited to see what he does going forward as a Knick, and whether or not he can create a better balance between, as you aptly put it, dribbling the air out of the basketball and generating some good ball movement, because he does make some really, really like whip smart passes. And I think his assist numbers actually should have been a lot higher over the last two games, but he had a couple of guys miss just wide open threes that on a good team probably would have gone down as assists. But I want to see him get a couple more hockey assists and generate some ball movement. So that's the area of improvement I'm looking for out of him, but obviously you can't really question the statistics over the last two games.
Yeah, and to your point about the assists, I mean, especially in the game on Tuesday, I thought he could have had a lot more assists than he wound up with, because he only had six. And, I mean, that game, nobody could hit an open shot. I mean, the fact is, other than, like, the centers and Kadeem Allen, who had kind of a good game, everybody else in that game on Tuesday shot 33% or less, other than Smith, DeAndre Jordan, Mitchell Robinson, and Kadeem Allen. I mean, that's horrific. It was such an anomaly game for how bad it was, that game on Tuesday. It was the Knicks, I thought, realistically could have won that game if they could have hit anything. It was insane. I don't know if I've seen a game this season where they were so off as a team as that game on Tuesday, because it was just like, you get Lance Thomas open for a shot. He had to play 26 minutes that night. Get him open for a shot, it was a brick. You get Knox open, it was a brick. You get Wesley Matthews, rest his soul, open, it was a brick, because Wesley Matthews was just awful in the two games that he played here. You know, much love to him overall. He's a cool dude, and I liked his ninja headbands, but he shot like 3 for 1,000 in the time that he was here. Smith probably deserves even more credit for finding guys over these last few games than he's gotten just in the assist total column. Cause like, I mean, that's what we measure this stuff by a lot of the times, but it's not necessarily the end all be all of how well he's passing. So I kind of look forward to, hopefully some guys will break out of slumps post All-Star break too, or at least get recharged, you know, like Vonleh, now that he's going to be on the team long-term. I mean, he got mostly benched for the game Friday night because of how poorly he was playing. He played about the first 3 minutes. Fizdale pulled him. I saw some people speculating that maybe he got whapped on the head or something and they took him out for an injury. But Fizdale basically said after the game, like, no, we took him out just because he's not playing well. And sometimes you need to just sit and like reassess things a little bit. So he got benched. Knox has just been shooting like really, really poorly lately. It feels like so long ago that we were talking about on here like his hot shooting streak, because I don't think Knox has hit higher than like 30% or like 33% shooting in like, I don't know, it feels like the last like 6-7 games at least. So I'm looking forward to how Smith does once this team hopefully recharges their batteries a little bit over All-Star. I don't know necessarily if they're even going to get another win before the All-Star break. What is there, like one more game, two more games next week before the league takes off?
We actually got four. We got a loaded week.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I mean, if you count, I'm counting Toronto in that. So really next week is Cleveland, Philly, Atlanta.
Yeah. Gross. All right. Wow, that sucks. But at any rate, that's a lot of games. I don't know that they're going to win any of them, which is sad, because like facing Atlanta and Cleveland, you would think that they would be able to win one of those two. But Cleveland just got Kevin Love back. Atlanta's actually playing decent lately. Like, I don't really think that they're going to win another game before the break. So hopefully after the break, they come back and they kind of have their batteries recharged, because they look really dead right now. It looks like it, I guess this is kind of what you would expect on a team made up of mostly like rookies and second year players, but it seems like they're all hitting the rookie wall right now, and it's just all happening at the same time, and it's kind of ugly to watch.
Yeah, they've been largely atrocious. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to get into Mitchell Robinson's play, because he has absolutely been one of the bright spots over the last two games. And then maybe we can get into some of the specifics on why guys like Knox, Alonzo Trier, Damian Dotson are struggling a little bit. That next on Locked On Knicks. Welcome back. Third and final time. The Knicks fall on Tuesday and Friday. On Tuesday, 105-92 against the Pistons. Then they travel to Detroit. They break 100 points for the first time in 8 games and still manage to lose by 17 to the Detroit Pistons. We're going to get into it. I want to talk about Mitchell Robinson's dominant play of late and then maybe break down some of the specifics of why some of the younger guys are struggling. But first, Alex, you have been thrown up all week. Let's get some staff vomit.
What? All right.
It's a great sound effect.
I do all my own stunts and my own sound effects. All right. So this, you're welcome to take whatever you want from these numbers, Gavin, if you want. I just wanted to present them without comment from me, or maybe with one or two comments. But take whatever you want from these, listeners. Take whatever you want from these. But I just found them interesting from Smith's first three games. So the raw numbers for him, he's averaging 21.3 points, 6.7 assists, one steal in the three games since he's come to the Knicks. He's shooting 46.9% from the floor, 23.5% from three, and 56% from the line. So for the season, he's shooting 33% from deep and 70% from the free throw line. So you could even argue that based off how he's played these last three games, he could even start playing better if his percentages normalize a little bit, which is pretty cool to think. So that's my first thing that I want to keep an eye on. Since he's gotten here, he's shooting 70% at the rim, and he's actually shooting 75%. It's only 3 of 4, so small sample size. But he's shooting 75% from 10 to 16 feet, which that part might be a little bit unsustainable. But the 70% at the rim is also probably a tiny bit unsustainable, but based off how he's been creating looks for himself, I think he has a good chance of actually keeping that number up. And that number is really, really encouraging to see. He's shooting 67% when he takes 3 to 6 dribbles and 61% between 15 to 7 seconds left on the shot clock. So what those two numbers tell me is that he's been doing better when he's not dribbling the ball into dust, and he can create looks relatively quickly when he gets down the floor and maybe runs quick sets, quick pick and rolls, things of that nature. That's beneficial to him. So I definitely want to see that, and I definitely want to see if Fizdale can get him in a rhythm where he's going to be able to take, you know, set up the offense for 5-6 seconds and then make quick decisions and use that, really utilize that speed that he has and the, you know, obviously the ball handling and penetrating ability. And then my last one, I love looking at lineup stats because I think it tells a lot about what's working and what's not working. DSJ, I won't like fudge it and make it sound like he's in like 5 of the top 6 lineups because he's not. But I think that has more to do with the fact that, you know, he's playing a lot of time with the starting unit and the bench players have actually arguably been playing better lately, led by Mitch Robinson. So I think that has something to do with him not being in the top of the top lineups. But his best 3-man combo with at least 10 minutes so far in the three games since he's been here is himself, Damian Dotson, and Mitch Robinson are plus 12.3 in 12 minutes. I would say that it's probably wise to play Dennis Smith Jr. with defenders in the same way that it's wise to play Emmanuel Mudiay and guys like that with defenders, because he himself is not a super strong defender. And I will say, based off Frank's comments, too, about how Frank is so excited to start playing with Dennis Smith, and Fizdale's already kind of name-dropped that duo as well, I am really, really intrigued to see what a 1-2 duo of Dennis Smith and Frank Ntilikina might look like. And I would hope that maybe Fizdale even gives them a start or two now that Tim Hardaway's kind of off the table. So there is your stat vomit.
Blech. It was great. I'm with you. Or I guess the better way to say that is I think I've just like observationally like would agree with what all those stats tell us to be true. And I'd say as far as him, like, not dribbling the air out of the ball and being a little more decisive, obviously that was one of the biggest knocks on him coming out of Dallas. And if you're going to be that ball dominant guy, you have to be hyper efficient. And that's come in kind of fits and spurts for him so far, where he wasn't too, I mean, he wasn't all that efficient the first two games. And then last time out, if he was a little better from the free throw line, it would have been double game efficiency for him. 31 points on just 15 shots. I mean, that's good in pretty much any way you put it. But I, to me, at least, like, I think there has to be, like, less stagnation off the ball when he's in, because he could dribble and he can probe and he can even get all the way to the rim. But it's not effective unless guys are moving off the ball or you're generating something out of a pick and roll. And there's another guy generating gravity on the floor, I guess, would be the best way to say it. Like, you, like, if he's, like, attacking this way and, like, hypothetically, like, the Knicks had Kevin Durant on their team, I think it's an entirely different level of effectiveness for Smith, because you just need that one guy who's just an automatic pull on the perimeter. And you already kind of have that in Mitchell Robinson and DeAndre Jordan, too, to a degree, with both guys providing some vertical spacing on those roles. So I think if you added a guy in that mold on the wing, which maybe Kevin Knox is that guy eventually, and he has been for stretches this season, but he's been, like, pretty horrible over the last three games, as we've noted, that's going to make Smith's life a whole lot more difficult. And I think it's a testament to his ability that he's been able to do what he has so far, even given the fact that he doesn't have those guys with him. And then I'm in general agreement with you. I'm really excited to see him play with Frank, because we've seen it in fits and spurts defensively with Smith. Like, he's had really good moments on the ball, and then he's had moments where he's just totally fallen asleep in pick and roll or an off ball situation. And that's, I mean, pretty similar to what he was doing in Dallas. So it'll be interesting to see when he kind of has some of that responsibility taken off of him, and Ntilikina can guard the primary ball handler, assuming the shooting guard isn't overly big and Smith could maybe match up with him. I think that'll make his life a little bit easier on that end and allow him to conserve some energy for offense. So I'm with you. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm kind of interested to see what kind of fit it is. But I think it's well past time we get into the Mitchell Robinson conversation. You could argue the best game of his young career, the first time out against the Pistons, certainly the best five-minute stretch of his career. Unless I'm mistaken, maybe he got one basket at the end, but I think he had about 13 points in like a 4 or 5 minute stretch to start the second quarter against the Pistons. And I remember, I can't remember, I think it was probably Breen, but he was just, like, remarking on just how incredible it was. Like, that was Robinson's career high. And it felt like it was, like, six, like, just lobs in a row that he got it on. But just, he was really eating Zaza Pachulia's lunch. Like, the very first play he was in the game, he literally just, like Zaza had, like, a clean box out on him, and he just, like, outlent them. Like, he literally just scooped the rebound up above him, barely jumping, and then laid it in without jumping, just literally wrapping his arms around Pachulia's body. And it was more of the same. He was just too quick, too athletic. The Knicks guards, Damian Dotson in particular, did a great job of aggressively looking for him, but he was just out of this world for that 5 minute stretch.
Yeah, I wanted to watch them again because they were all so pretty, and I wanted to count the oops real quick. So I'm watching his field goals right now. And first two were oops. One was from Dotson, one was from Smith. The next one is what you were talking about with Pachulia. And then he had another stretch of two straight oops in a row. One from Dotson and another one from, who is the other one from? We'll see in just a second here as the video loads. Oh, the other one was from Kadeem Allen.
Yeah,
I mean, it was kind of wild to see it, because you've gotten so used to him and Trier having that connection over the last, like, 3 weeks or so, where it seems like every bucket that Mitch makes is a lob from Trier. And funny enough, on his best stretch of his career so far, he didn't have a single one from Trier. And it was all from other guys on the team. I will say, like, I'll say this more in the context of Mitch than I will with Smith, but when those two start to get chemistry in the way that, like, Trier and Mitch have chemistry, and in the way that Dennis Smith and Jordan have chemistry, I think it's going to be nasty. Like, because I think that Dennis Smith is probably already the best, one of the best PNR ball handlers on the team, if not the best. And Mitch is definitely like the most dangerous pick and roll threat on this team right now because of that just like insane lob catching ability. It's honestly like I don't like the hyperbole. Like I don't want to get too crazy on it, but I really can't. I can't think of too many players that have the oop range that he does, I guess would be what I would call it. Like
it's like catch radius, right? It's like the term that like people like associate with like great receivers in the NFL. Like he's like DeAndre Hopkins. If DeAndre Hopkins was 6'11 and had like a 37-inch vertical.
Yeah. I mean, cause some of them that he puts down are just insane. I mean, it's, you could throw it literally anywhere within like a 6-7 foot radius of the hoop and he'll throw it down. And it's kind of similar to I just think that people in the league aren't used to seeing a guy who's quite as athletic as he is, because it's the same thing with the blocks coming now too. Like in the game last night, in the second Pistons game, he didn't do as much offensively. And I mean, that's, it's like he still shot 3 of 5 and, you know, had 11 points, which was sweet. But like his blocks, he had the one stretch where he came to the top of the key, blocked a Luke Kennard jumper with like 7 feet of space between them when Kennard was queuing that jumper up. And he just came out of nowhere and blocked that one. The Pistons got the ball back and then they sent it out to Ish Smith, who like credit to him for thinking he could get this shot off. But Ish Smith is what, like 6'2" or something, like if that. And Mitch was actually fairly close to him. And I mean, the ball got like an inch out of Ish's hand and Mitch had already swatted it. And he was like probably 3-4 feet away for that one too. It's just, it's crazy the reach that he has, the timing that he has. And it's constantly referenced on the broadcast, but like the ambidextrousness that he has with blocking. Like he doesn't have a strong hand for blocking. He blocks with his left and he blocks with his right. And it doesn't really matter which way you attack him. He can block it either way. And he's never like trying to go across his body with his right hand to block a shot, because he knows that he has the